From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. We got a great show for you today. We got Chef Rick Bayless. He'll be by later. It's great. So, if listening at home, sit close to your radios because the man smells delicious. Before we get started, one of the frustrating things about radio is that no matter how successful you might be in that medium, sometimes you feel ignored by the world at large. We're like a second-class medium sometimes. Well, this week we learned about a foolproof way to get a lot of attention for your radio show.
Peter, you slut.
So, while I'm waiting for my call of sympathy from the president, why don't you give us a call? The number's 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, this is Luke Block. Our mail comes through Pettigrew, Arkansas.
Your mail comes through Pettigrew, Arkansas?
Well, what about the women?
We live way away from our post office. It's one of those rural post offices out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, I see. So you're way out there doing what?
We do pottery and raise sheep.
So you are totally situated for the apocalypse.
We are ready. We have been ready for so long.
You may not even notice it.
We may not, and it's going to be an anticlimax.
That's a great slogan for your Chamber of Commerce. Pettigrew, it's already done here.
Well, welcome to the show, Luke. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, a comedian and a host of the Morning Amp on Vocalo, Mr. Brian Babylon is here.
Hey, how are you?
Also, a humorist who will be appearing March 16th on the Moth main stage at the Players Club in New York City, Mr. Tom Baudette.
Hey, Luke. Hey.
And finally, it's the woman behind the advice column, Ask Amy, and the author of the memoir, The Mighty Queens of Freeville. It's Ms. Amy Dickinson.
Hey, Luke.
Sounds like the perfect panel.
Isn't it, though? Well, you're going to start us off, of course, with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle will, of course, recreate three voices from the week's news. Your job, identify or explain them. Do that 2 times out of 3. You'll win Carl's voice on your voicemail. Ready to go?
I am.
Here is your first quote.
I just went in there and said, eeny, meeny, miny, moe. And Santorum came up as moe.
That was a voter in Georgia, one of many this week, who were just thrilled to be able to take part in what Democratic exercise?
Super Tuesday.
Yes, Super Tuesday. Ta-da. On Tuesday, Super Tuesday, residents of 10 states spoke their feelings, and their feeling was, meh. Now, most people are saying they're bored with the GOP primary by now. It is actually a lot of fun if you look at it in the right way. And what I mean by that is you look at it like it's a NASCAR race. Watch it for the crashes. It's like, is Romney going to make it around the turn? I think so. No, no, there's a microphone. No.
Pete, you know what I think we need to do is just bring back Ronald Reagan, you know, just zombie-fied.
Zombie Ronald Reagan.
Zombie Ronald Reagan will just jazz up this GOP race in a heartbeat.
I mean, that's what they did with Attila the Hun, right? They strapped him to his saddle and just rode him in the battle.
I think it was El Cid. But now, it was an interesting week for Romney because everybody expects him to just finally break this thing open, and he never does. And instead, we find out more and more weaknesses. For example, we learned that Romney has a big problem with poorer voters. He lost to Rick Santorum among lower-income people everywhere. It's tough. You see, Romney doesn't know any poor people. It's hard for him to relate. You know, when he meets one, he says things like, oh, I see you live in a cardboard box. Where's your summer box? We also want to offer our congratulations to Newt Gingrich. He won his second state. He won his home state, Georgia. It's his only win other than South Carolina. And as we now know, the truth is, he was seeing South Carolina the whole time he was with Georgia. That explains that. Anyway, after his big success in his home state, his plan is to go live in each remaining primary state for 30 years prior to their voting.
Oh, he's been fun. I've actually really enjoyed having him in the race. He's, you know, he's like a gadfly. He really mixes it up. Nobody knows what to expect. He's been a lot of fun. I don't know.
That's also true of the guy who stumbled onto my subway train this morning.
Never know what to expect. He's fun.
Kind of fun.
And it is nice, as long as they get off at the next stop.
Exactly.
Right?
All right, Luke, here's your next quote.
We've shown that no one can enslave us.
That was a man who won an election in Russia on Sunday and will now be enslaving his country himself, we assume. Who was it?
It's Putin.
Yes, it's Vladimir Putin. That's right. He actually has served two terms already as president of Russia, and then he was forced by law to take a term off. So instead, he ran the country via an amusing ventriloquist dummy named Comrade Jerry.
Hello.
Putin was very excited with his massive victory on Sunday. He actually teared up on election night, speaking in Moscow. So, of course, he tore off his shirt to dab his tears with it. That's what he does. Then where his tears fell, a unicorn sprang from the earth carrying a Russian flag. Or so we were all told.
Well, are we going to be back scared of the Russians now? Because we're on
the
way,
I would
man.
Be if I were you.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
so, yeah.
I'm actually looking forward to being afraid of Russia again. I'm getting tired of being afraid of China.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting tired of being afraid of us. So I think it'll be nice. Very good, Luke. Here is your last quote.
Do you really think a defensive lineman grits his teeth harder because he stands to make an additional $1,500?
That was T.J. Symers writing in the L.A. Times about the latest scandal in professional football. What?
Oh, it was the Falcons bounty program, I think.
It was the bounty program, yes. I think it was the New Orleans Saints, but yes, the
that's
NFL
right,
bounty program,
right.
You're right.
Somewhere
yes.
down there.
Demmer, yeah. Somewhere over the hill where they play football. People were amazed, shocked to discover that players on the New Orleans Saints and later the Washington Redskins were paid bounties to injure opposing players. For a, quote, cart-off, if the other player was taken off the field, you got $1,000. For a, quote, knockout, you got $1,500. And for a, quote, existential crisis, making the other player reconsider his life choices and go to law school after all, you got $3,000. The crazy thing about this is there's all this outrage over football players getting paid to hurt members of the opposing team.
Yeah, that's the point. I mean, they're already paid millions to do exactly the thing they're doing.
Instead
right?
of $7 million to go tackle that guy, they're going to get $7 million and $1,000 to tackle that guy. Yeah. Oh, no, we can't have that.
We've pooled our earnings.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And what are you going to have bounties for on the panel?
$55 to have one of you two taken out. So. Oh, 50, yeah.
That's it? $55?
That's all we got.
We're panelists, for God's sake.
Mitt Romney was asked in the campaign trail about this controversy, and he said, $1,000? Does money come that small? But the thing that was frustrating to me was $1,000 for knocking the guy down? That's nothing. They should have really gone for it. Like, $5,000 if you go up to Brett Favre in the game and kiss him on the lips. And you get $10,000 if Favre sexts you after the game.
I mean, I want to make clear I was offended by this. It goes against all my moral underpinnings. But the thing I was most disappointed with is it wasn't more money.
Really?
I mean, if it was like $10,000, $50,000, that would have been a scandal. This just doesn't make sense.
You think you're just pitying these guys for being poor businessmen?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if my team is winning the Super Bowl, I don't care. I mean, does that sound bad? Ugh, should I say that?
Carl, how did Luke do in our quiz?
Luke, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or answering machine.
Well done.
Well done, Luke. Thank you very much.
We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, you can go to WBEZ.org or our very own website, which is waitwait.npr.org. Panel, it is time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Brian, in what may be a first, a researcher from Britain discovered a wild brown bear in Alaska doing what in the woods?
Okay, not stealing picnic baskets,
no.
Clearly. You have to give me the teeniest hint on this.
Well, even bears need a spa day every now and then.
Oh, he was taking a soak in one of those hot hot springs.
You're getting there, but that's not that unusual. Like, well, living in the woods is just hell on your pores, apparently.
Giving himself a facial?
He was giving itself a facial, is what the bear was doing.
Exfoliating bears?
The bear, yes. I know, it's true. The bear had picked up this barnacle-covered rock, and he was rubbing in its own face and rubbing off this dried skin. Scientists say this is the first time they've witnessed a bear using a tool for any purpose, and it proves that bears are both more intelligent than previously suspected and also surprisingly vain.
You should see them in their yoga class.
Oh, it's terrible.
I guarantee you're going to see this, whatever this bear facial stuff at the Whole Foods for like $55.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guarantee you will see bear facial, organic bear facial.
Imagine.
Barnacle bear rock.
Let's all take a moment to spare some pity for the bears when they discover waxing. Yeah. That's going to be it.
Because, boy, after you come out of hibernation, you got all that undercoat.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to get that out. Mm.
This explains why when you're taking a bear out in a date, it takes forever for it to get ready.
Right.
Like, how long?
How long is it going to be? All right.
You're beautiful. You're beautiful. You're beautiful. It's true. I saw your face in a crowd.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Tom Baudette, Amy Dickinson, and Brian Babylon. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you. Thank you all so much. Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff, the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi there. This is Doug Hess from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh, hey, Doug. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
You sound very cheerful.
I've wanted to be on your show for so long, it's hard not to be.
How's it going so far?
So far, so good.
All right.
I don't think I've gotten anything wrong yet.
No. Have we haven't disappointed you yet, have we?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show, Doug. You are going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Doug's topic?
This seat's taken.
One downside to having a job is having to go to work. You have to contend with delays, crowded trains, and, of course, arriving at your job. Well, it turns out somebody's come up with a way to vastly improve the commute. Our panelists are going to tell you about it. One of them is telling the truth. Guess that person, you'll win our prize. Ready to go?
I'm ready as I'll ever be.
Here we go. First up, Tom Baudette.
You do everything right. You're lined up on the platform exactly where you should be to score a precious seat on the 810 Metro, and you're still standing in the aisle. Now, you can have a permanently reserved seat on that train with Strap Hanger, TM, the exciting new commuter comfort system from Urban Survivor. Unfurl the pocket-sized parachute material, secure the rugged titanium multi-hook to the overhead baggage rack or handhold, and slip into your cozy sling chair, which forms perfectly and lovingly to your bottom, now hovering comfortably and free of the hard plastic germ-coated seats of those other saps. It's a simple swing chair for short hops on the subway, or roll out and zip yourself into the cocoon, TM, for that long, strange head and neck supported vertical nap on the way home. Now available in business black, what are you looking at, red? And the new personal space creating medical beige, which says, I'm injured and probably a little crazy. Strap Hanger. If you are one, you should own one.
All right. Strap Hanger for when you want a seat and there isn't one. Your next attempt to make the trip to work more enjoyable comes from Brian Babylon.
How many times have you thought, I sure wish Miss Yap Yap next to me on the bus would shut up about her ex-boyfriend's new girlfriend? As with so many problems, the solution is a gun. A special new shut-up gun invented by Japanese scientists. The prototype speech jammer gun instantly records a loud talker's voice and shoots it right back at them with a slight delay. If you hear your own voice repeated back to you as you speak, you'd shut up because of what scientists call, quote, a delayed auditory effect, or just because you realize how dumb you sound. Either way, it works. With that public transportation problem solved, Japanese scientists are now developing a make-it-not-smell-like-urine-on-a-subway gun.
The shut-up gun. Pointed at them. They stopped talking. Your last story of someone trying to improve your commute comes from Amy Dickinson.
Commuters on the freeways of Los Angeles have traditionally come up with creative ways to pass the time while they sit in traffic, including, of course, carjacking each other, or worse, pitching scripts to fellow stalled motorists. Now, Gene Roseman, a frustrated and bored commuter, has come up with a way to roll all of these LA pastimes into one. She's invented a game called Freeway Frogger. Every day, two bicyclists set out on the notorious 404 and try to navigate 10 miles of wall-to-wall traffic, Frogger style. Cars with sensors try to block their path, and drivers track their progress through an app on their phone. Drivers who correctly pick the winner can register for the grand prize, a bus pass. They still won't reach their destination, but at least they can sleep on the way.
All right. Very good. Here, then, are your choices. Is it from Tom Baudet, the strap hanger, a seat you hang from the strap, so you have a seat even when there's no seat to be had? From Brian Babylon, the shut-up gum, which you can point at any noisy person on your bus and train and make them shut up with the sound of their own voice? Or from Amy Dickinson, Freeway Frogger, a game that makes those interminable hours in the 405 freeway much more fun as you play a real-life game? Which of these is the real story of a commute being made a little bit better?
You know, this never, ever happens to me, but I happen to know the answer to this one.
How do you know the answer?
The gun, the auditory gun, is the story that I read. I'm going to choose that one.
You read about that?
Yep.
All right. And
so you're choosing it just because you happen to know it's true.
Yeah, really.
That somehow doesn't seem fair.
Yeah.
It does seem like a flimsy
excuse. Well, let's see if your disreputable plan has success. We actually spoke to someone about this.
Sometimes you're on the phone and you get that weird echo where you hear your voice right after you speak and it confuses you. The voice jamming gun works on that principle.
That is, in fact, David Axe. He's a writer for Wired Magazine's Danger Room blog, talking about the shut-up gun. Congratulations. You were right. You knew about it. You have earned a point for Brian simply for telling the truth. And you have won our game. Carl's voice will be yours. Congratulations. Well done.
Thank you very much.
You talk too much, you worry me to death. You talk too much, you even worry my pet. You just talk, talk too much.
And now the game where we invite really interesting people on to ask them about things they're simply not interested in. 25 years ago, a guy from Oklahoma opened a restaurant in Chicago serving food from Mexico. This surprisingly turned out to be a fantastically good idea. Today, Rick Bayless is a multi-award-winning celebrity chef, a best-selling author of cookbooks, and star of his own TV show. He's a Top Chef Masters champion. I'm not done yet. Next month, he's going to throw it all away to go be a stage actor. Rick Bayless, welcome back to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Great
to
have you. Thank you. Thank you very much, Peter.
So, I realize it is not unusual for people in the food service industry to want to go be an actor. Usually they're though the waiters, not the owners of the restaurant, though.
Yes, this is a little different.
So just to set this up, so you are, after everything you've done, the restaurants here in Chicago and the cookbooks and the TV show, you are going to go star in your own theatrical production this spring.
Well, I'm creating one.
Yes.
I'm creating one with a couple of other people at Looking Glass Theater Company, and we are... Well, I think the best way to describe this is that we're going to do something that's like Midsummer Night's Dream with a meal. So it's all about food being magic, and you get to ingest it and see what happens to you.
So you're actually...
After you...
See, I usually have that experience at less quality Mexican restaurants. That's something I associate with you. So you're having theater with a dinner.
I don't like where this is going.
No, you may have stumbled upon something here. Uh-huh. No, so the idea is, so this is a play. You're in the play.
I'm in
the
play.
You're performing in the play.
And I'm making the food.
You're making the food in the play. So there's the play uh-huh. that's going on, and you're playing a chef in the play, and
yes.
you're actually cooking food, but you're serving to the audience.
Exactly. It's set in a boarding house, so it sort of makes sense, because everybody's seated at boarding house tables, the entire audience.
Right.
And the actors.
What is the play about? Is it about the meal?
It's about the meal. It's about, well, I'm going to say this is going to sound kind of crazy, but it's about like when you eat something and it just has this amazing effect on you. You just like you all of a sudden see the world in a slightly different way. And, you know, it also, in that sort of Midsummer Night's Dream kind of thing, involves circus performers.
Oh, boy.
So you bring out a little covered dish and five clowns jump out?
You know, I'm going to steal that.
By all means.
Yeah.
That's so are you hoping that this, like, becomes a long-running thing? It'll become like the Cats of Eating?
That sounds like the little dishes around or something like that that people are going
to... Yeah. Friskies.
You've been...
Here, have a little more milk.
And you're doing this in the midst of all these other things. You have a new series, a new season of your TV show,
yes.
Mexico One Plate at a Time.
On wholly focused on Baja California, one of the most amazing places on the planet.
Right. Did you go down to Cabo?
Yes, we went down to Cabo.
What did you think? Because I've been to Cabo San Lucas. Mm-hmm. Cabo San Lucas is an interesting place. Basically Southern California, except you can get Viagra without a prescription.
Exactly.
Don't ask me how I know that.
How do you know that,
I
Peter?
Just noticed a sign in the window as I was walking by. Some more authentic Mexican experience.
Uh-huh, right.
But that would be...
Yeah.
I'm imagining that.
Yeah.
Yes. Uh huh. What is the most?
Was that
authentic?
That donkey show?
Yeah, no,
donkey.
That's Tijuana.
No.
Your great innovation 25 years ago and going strong was to show to Chicago and America, eventually the world, that Mexican cuisine can be very, very good. But surprisingly, despite your best efforts, you have not yet killed Taco Bell.
No, I think they're going stronger
well,
than ever.
Well, and this is why, because they have a level of innovation that I'm not sure that you, sir, can match. So we've actually looked at the latest Taco Bell menu, and we want to see.
No.
I just want to throw these things at you, see if you have a response. For example,
yes,
this is why they're winning. Okay. All right, I want to see if you can do better than this. For example, you go into Taco Bell, Doritos Locos Tacos. That is a Taco Supreme, ground beef, all the fixings, but the shell is made from nacho cheese Dorito substance. Beat that!
This is like
genius
chef. Another language. I've never even heard of these things. What is
but
that?
Wait a minute, isn't Doritos traditional Spanish?
Sí, son Doritos.
Sí, son Doritos.
How about this? How about the Crunchwrap Supreme? That's beef, nacho cheese, wrapped up and grilled, quote, for maximum portability. So, all right, Rick Bayless.
You know,
that's like everything I cook. Maximum portability.
That's exactly my problem. I haven't focused enough on portability.
Exactly.
I mean, because you need something while you eat and tweet at the same time.
Eat
and tweet.
It's got to have a handle on it, you see.
Slightly more seriously, because you are so well-known and successful in your field, we're assuming this is like anything else, that you got these young guys coming up to you and like, trying to win you over. So how do you deal? What do you do when the food's terrible?
I always have a good time, okay?
Really?
So that's what I can always say. Is I've just had the best time here this evening.
Yeah.
Really?
That's
safe.
Like one of
that's
the best time.
Same
yeah.
Yeah.
So if you say that when you leave here today, we'll know.
Yes, it was so nice to be here.
Really?
It's like when your friend gives you his manuscript to read.
Imagine, I'm going to test. So I've just cooked something for you, and this, if God knows if I were ever be so foolish as to try to cook something for you, this would happen. And I'd say it would be awful. And I'd say, so, did you enjoy your lunch? And you would say,
oh, Peter, thank you so much. This was such a great time.
Oh.
Did you notice how easily that came out?
That was really good.
I'm really practicing that.
I know.
Golden Globe.
Have you ever been in a situation where something is so awful you actually have trouble eating it? You're like, "Work, how can I slip this into my napkin?"
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I try to go to the restroom and then sneak out the front door. Oh, did I not say? I'm sorry, I didn't say thank you.
Really? You dine and ditch? Oh my God, there's like one of America's leading chefs is climbing out the bathroom window. He left money we don't understand.
Throw money on the table and get out.
Well, Rick Bayless, it is always a pleasure to see you here. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
I am the Lorax. I speak for the trees in a voice that sounds a lot like Danny DeVito.
Kids today know the Lorax as an amusing corporate spokesman, but it wasn't always like that. The original version of the Lorax was quite different. His creator, Dr. Seuss, was born 108 years ago this week, And in tribute to him, we're going to ask you three questions about him. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Rick Bayless playing for?
Rick is playing for Anne Orchier of New York, New York.
First question, Dr. Seuss wasn't actually a doctor. He was born Theodore Geisel and adopted his pen name Y. A, Dr. Seuss was the name of his childhood dentist, famous for telling fantabulous stories while drilling cavities. B, he was barred from writing for his college paper for underage drinking and needed a pseudonym. Or C, he was always getting teased because Geisel is Dutch for toilet plunger.
Oh, man, I don't know anything at all about Dr. Seuss.
Really?
So, let's see. The one that's most romantic is the first one, the dentist.
I think the phrase, the one that was most romantic was the dentist, has never before been said. So you're going to go with the dentist, the idea that it was Dr. Seuss was his childhood dentist who regaled him with stories while drilling his cavities.
I have a feeling I'm going down the wrong path here. But
who am I to tell you?
Yeah, that is my answer.
It was actually the underage drinking, actually. Oh. It was. he was in Dartmouth. He was busted for drinking. They wouldn't let him write for the college paper. He picked a pseudonym, his middle name, and he was a doctor, Dr. Seuss. All right. Now, he's known mostly for his kids' books, of course, but he also wrote and illustrated some books for adults, including which of these? A, the $5,000 owed by Bartholomew Cubbins to his bookie. B, the Seven Lady Godivas, featuring lots of naked ladies. Or C, there's a schnoozel in my caboozle.
Wow. Well, schnoozel in my caboozle sounds too much like the rest of his work.
Yeah,
so I think I'm going to throw that one out. I think the second one.
Seven Lady Godivas?
I think set up.
You're right. The Seven Lady Godivas. In fact, he did this book. The book flopped because naked ladies, as drawn by Dr. Seuss, just aren't very sexy, if you can imagine. He had a lot of skills. Erotica? No. Last question. Dr. Seuss tried to make his kids' books a little more edgy as well. For example, his classic early reader, Hop on Pop, originally included what word? A, contraceptive. B, concubine. Or C, Nixon.
Oh, wow. That's hard. Well, doesn't sort of concubine sort of has that Seuss feel to it?
I could kind of imagine
another
that
sentence
character.
That's never been said. I've told you how much I enjoy your food, I think, over the years. Yes. I mentioned that to you. So I feel like I owe you.
Okay, so it's not concubine. I'm going to say Nixon. No, I'm going to say contraceptive.
Yes! Very good. It's contraceptive.
Well played.
The verse originally went, when I read, I am smart, I always cut whole words apart. Constantinople, Timbuktu, contraceptive, kangaroo. Seuss said he just wanted to make sure his editor, Bennett Cerf, was paying attention. And he was. Carl, how did Rick Bayless do in our quiz?
Rick had two correct answers there, Peter, so he wins for Anne Orchier.
So, Rick, how did you enjoy yourself?
I had the best time.
Well done. Rick Bayless is an award-winning chef, and he's the co-creator and star of Cascabel, opening March 21st at the Looking Glass Theater here in Chicago. Rick Bayless, thank you so much for being with us again. Rick Bayless, ladies and gentlemen.
From the snow-capped mountains to the coral shores, you're the only one my heart adores. You've only got three competitors, tacos, enchiladas.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Amy Dickinson, Brian Babylon, and Tom Baudette. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl throws his support behind Mitt Romney.
No.
In the listener limerick challenge, I got $1,000 for saying that. If you'd like
Why, because it hurt me?
If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Tom, Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper has a way with words. He introduced his lieutenant governor to a group of children at an elementary school this week by calling his lieutenant governor a rising star in what field?
Prostitution.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah. Actually, what he said was sex, is what he said. Hickenlooper called his lieutenant governor, quote, a rising sex star. We're not sure what he meant. Maybe he was wondering whether to go with rock star or sex symbol, and he split the difference. The governor called this the most embarrassing press conference of his life, but it wasn't for long, because also this week, the governor was introducing the mayor of Denver at an event, and he mentioned the mayor's wife was an accomplished singer, and he said, quote, you know, we read about how President Obama sings to Michelle in the shower, so you can just imagine what the mayor gives his wife in the shower. He went on, I mean what she gives him in the shower, unquote.
Oh. So I'm imagining, what's his name, Hickenhooper?
Hickenlooper.
Hickenlooper, that's become a verb, I'll bet, in
it
Colorado
really
now.
Is.
Oh, boy, you Hickenloopered now.
Oh, man.
It's like you pull a Hickenlooper.
Yeah. People about to give speeches saying, don't Hickenlooper, don't Hickenlooper, don't Hickenlooper. Amy.
What?
According to a recent study done at Harvard, women.
Good.
So you know
women,
it's good.
Women in a relationship, married or not, with a man, are at their happiest when?
I know this, and it's not because I went to Harvard, because I'm a woman. We like it when our guys are unhappy.
Exactly right.
I know.
According to the survey,
because
women...
then we know we've succeeded.
Apparently. Women, according to the survey, are happiest when their boyfriends or husbands are miserable. That's because researchers found all women are evil. No, that's... In addition... The idea is your girlfriend or wife, if you're a guy, takes your being upset as proof of you being invested in the relationship. Whereas if the man is easygoing and cheerful, it means the man is emotionally distant. Because if he was really paying attention to the girl, he'd be miserable.
Peter, you're like, so overthinking this.
No, it's not.
Here's how it goes.
Here's how it goes. Yeah. Explain this.
Here's
Explain
how it goes.
I want to hear this.
Right. Yeah. We like it when men actually admit to us that they're feeling a little down. That way we can empathize and commiserate, which is what we like to do. Men like it when women are like upbeat and cheerful, because that means to them that they're...
We don't have to talk.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. That's right. Here you go.
Although, and this is true, this is another thing. Women become happy when the man realizes the woman is miserable, although the men are miserable because the woman is miserable, even though that makes them happy. Clear?
I'll never get married.
If we feel like it gives, we feel like it gives us a job.
What if the man is unhappy with the woman? Does that count?
Oh, we don't like that.
Yeah, I tuned out. I don't know.
Tom, one of the themes you hear on the right from time to time is that President Obama is always blaming President Bush for his own troubles. So Rick Santorum, fed up with this, made a unique campaign promise this week. He said if elected, he will never, ever, under any circumstances, mention what?
Barack Obama?
Not only Barack Obama.
Or President Bush?
Not only.
I mean,
keep going.
They're still not mentioning him. Any other president.
In fact, that's what he said. He said he will never mention any former president's name.
Well,
because
he's going to be the new caliphate.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what he's going to be.
So they're going to be like, the presidents will be like the Voldemort of the...
Yeah. Over there, that's the memorial that must not be named.
What does that even mean?
Fed up with what he sees as President Obama's habit of foisting blame on his predecessor, Mr. Santorum said, quote, I will never mention a former president's name when I'm in office, unquote.
So that sounds like a bad breakup. Like, don't mention his name.
How is he going to do this? Is he going to, like, once he's in office, Is he going to invite friends and big donors to come sleep in the beardy guy bedroom in the White House? Oh, yeah, look out the window at the beautiful, skinny, white guy monument. And Mitt Romney is going to be like, you talking about me? Are you?
So, wow, I had not heard that. Yeah. That's really...
Well, you know Santorum, he goes all the way. Well, not that way, but he went all the... You know what I mean. He's committed, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
How do you manage not to mention any former president?
Who says things like that? That's cuckoo town.
Oh, Mr.
Not to mention the name of the city where he'll be living.
Yes. Yeah.
Here in...
S-H-I-N-G. T-O-N, baby. D.C. Washington, D.C. It's paradise to me. It's not because it is the grand old seat of precious freedom and democracy. No, no, no. It's not the greenery turning golden fall, the scenery circling the mall. It's just that's where my baby lives, that's all.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And you can check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian give you the secret to sharing your sleeping bag with 150 rattlesnakes. For those who wish to do that, we'll tell you how. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Kim Snipes calling from Denison, Texas.
Hey, how are things in Denison, Texas?
Cold. It's winter again.
Oh, boy. That was a brief spring. What do you do there?
I'm a biologist at Austin College down the road in Sherman, Texas.
Uh-huh. Okay. And what do you study?
Well, with my last name, it was kind of inevitable. I study birds.
Your last name is what?
Snipes.
Your last name is Snipe?
Yes.
Do Boy Scouts hunt for you?
No, not yet. My grandfather had the best line in that he said his daughter, my mom, was the only person to go on a snipe hunt and actually bag one.
There you go. Well done, Grandpa. Welcome to the show, Kim. You, of course, are going to play the Listener Limerick Challenge. Carl here will recite three limericks for you. The last word will be up to you. Ready to play?
Yep.
Here we go. Here is your first limerick.
When will baby and I have some funsy? Is the pooping and crying all dunsy? Your mood I'll compute with this lovely new suit. You are measured and probed by this...
onesie?
Yes, indeed, the onesie. Parenting just got a little creepier thanks to the Exmo Baby onesie. This suit has built-in sensors that send you, the parent, a text message or email telling you why your baby is crying.
No.
Oh,
so you're
Lord.
Messing around in your iPhone, right? And your baby's messing his diaper. And you get a little note from his onesie saying, oh, baby has messed his diaper. And then you can immediately send a text to your wife informing her the baby needs changing.
So hold on, Pete. Are you now telling me that there's an app for crap?
Yeah.
All right, very good. Here is your next limerick.
For small baked goods, there's new sneaky uptakes. Is it a cash machine? No, it is a fake. I don't care what it's costing. It sells creamy frosting. It's a vending machine for a...
cupcake.
Right. For those of you who can't make it to the cupcake bank before it closes, you'll be happy to know that now there is such a thing as a cupcake ATM. Sprinkles in Beverly Hills was the first bakery to install a cupcake ATM on the wall outside. It'll probably be the last once people learn that they have to pay a $3 ATM fee if it's not their bakery.
Okay.
Here is your last limerick.
I am sad to see Doggy's young grace drift, so he'll get what I think is an ace gift. He'll regain his pluck with a nip and a tuck. I'm getting my doggy a...
facelift?
Yes, a facelift. Have you ever looked at your dog and thought, gosh, he's got a huge nose. If only plastic surgery for dogs existed. If so, what the hell is your problem? But it does exist. According to the ever-reasonable Daily Mail newspaper, in Britain, doggy plastic surgery is on the rise. One British couple reportedly spent nearly $20,000 on a facelift for their bloodhound.
No.
No.
Think about that. That's the breed of dog with the big droopy face, like, hello, how are you?
What did they get tucked?
Yeah.
That what? Is really sad.
Like, now he looks like a collie now?
Maybe they think it's for the dog's benefit. Dog would be more cheerful if it looks a little younger.
Oh, he can be at the doggy park. Yeah. And when he sniffs a tree, he can do it with confidence.
Get that little doggy trout pout thing going.
Carl, how did Kim do?
Kim, you had 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done. Thank you, Kim, for playing.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Brian Babylon has the lead, Peter. He has 4 points. Tom Beaudet has 3. Amy Dickinson, 2.
All right, Amy, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin. Your first question, fill-in-the-blank. In the wake of his controversial comments about a Georgetown law student, over 50 companies have now pulled their ads from Blank's radio show.
Rush Limbaugh.
Right. Thousands of people in Britain showed up to see the Blank kick off the first day of her Diamond Jubilee.
The Queen.
Yes. The Florida Senate this week passed an amendment finally allowing residents to dye their blanks pretty colors.
Pools?
Pets. Robert Sherman, best known for co-writing songs like It's a Small World and Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, died Monday at age 86.
Docious.
Yes, because of rust problems that could cause crashes, Chrysler recalled over 200,000 blanks.
Chrysler K-cars.
No, Jeeps. A member of Egypt's parliament was forced to resign after telling his colleagues that the bandages on his face came from a mugging when they really came from blank.
Plastic surgery.
Yes, a nose job. The Egyptian parliamentarian didn't want anyone to know he'd gotten some work done on his own little pyramid. So he told everybody that a gang of masked gunmen had beaten him up. And hey, what do you know? Those bastards had straightened out my bridge and given me a little button nose. When the truth was revealed, he, in the true spirit of a new democracy, lied to his constituents some more until he was forced to resign. He's recently been seen nicely filling out a bikini, but insists he's just a late bloomer. Carl, how did Amy do in our quiz?
Oh. Amy had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. She now has 10 points and the lead.
Yes.
I'm
there
enjoying
you go.
It.
That's exciting. Enjoy it for a second. Tom, you are up next. Fill in the blank. On Monday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu arrived in the U.S. to meet with blank.
Barack Obama.
Right. House Majority Leader Eric Cantor and Oklahoma Senator Tom Coburn officially endorsed blank this week.
Mitt Romney.
Right after one of their own became an informant for the FBI, 5 blanks associated with the group Anonymous were arrested.
Hackers.
Yes. At an emotional press conference this week, quarterback blank and the Indianapolis Colts announced they were parting ways.
Peyton Manning.
Yes. A Boulder man tried to avoid paying his bar tab by blanking.
By pretending to pass out.
No, by cutting through a wall and escaping. Although it grossed over $70 million in its opening weekend, the movie Blank was criticized for having almost 70 merchandising tie-ins.
Oh, the Lorax.
Yes,
thing.
I am the Lorax. I speak for a fee. Saying it's like alcohol, televangelist Pat Robertson surprised many by saying Blank should be legal.
Oh, Pat Robertson. Pot, yes.
After 9 years on the air, the UK Advertising Standards Authority finally got the joke in Sofa King's advertising slogan that their prices are blank.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
The slogan for the Sofa King company was, "Our prices are Sofa King low." That's what it says. 3 perfectly innocent words. It took 9 years for the UK Advertising Standards Authority to read that aloud. They've demanded that Sofa King stop using that slogan immediately. But Sofa King spokespeople Mike Roch and Hugh Jass say the problem is all in their mind. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points, and Tom has the lead.
All right, so how many then does Brian need to win?
6 correct answers.
All right, Brian, here we go. This is for the game, fill in the blank. On Thursday, 6 world powers called on blank to allow inspectors to visit its nuclear facilities.
Iran.
Right. Scientists warned that GPS on electronic devices could be disrupted by radiation from blanks that began hitting the Earth's atmosphere Thursday.
Solar flares?
Yes, the White House announced this week that it was moving the blank from Chicago to Camp David.
G8.
Right. Mexican telecommunications tycoon Carlos Slim beat out Bill Gates and Warren Buffett to top this year's list of the world's blankest people.
Richest man of the world.
Yes. Newly crowned Miss Seattle is catching flack for tweeting how much she hated blank.
Cupcakes?
No, Seattle. In December, she tweeted, "Ew, I am seriously am hating Seattle right now, and can't stand cold, rainy Seattle and the annoying people." Lindsay Lohan's appearance on blank last weekend earned the show the second highest ratings of the season.
SNL.
Yes, Saturday Night Live this week. Taco Bell unveiled their new type of taco, which has a shell made out of blank.
Doritos.
Yes. A Pennsylvania man pulled over for driving without his lights on was given a DUI after he tried to blank the policeman.
Kiss.
High five.
Hey, man.
Gerald Decker could have just walked away with a warning about driving without lights, but when the officer flagged him down and told him, Decker said, "Thanks, buddy," and attempted unsuccessfully to high-five the officer.
A drunk high-five is hilarious.
No, and that's when the officer decided a pop sobriety test was in order, which Decker also attempted unsuccessfully. Carl, did Brian do well enough to win?
He needed 6 correct answers, and Brian had 6 correct answers. So with 16 points, Brian Babylon is this week's champion.
Very well done, Brian. How to do it. You walked away with it.
I know. Thank you.
In just a minute, now that the NFL bounty system has been exposed, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what other industry will adopt that same bounty system. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Lindemood Bell Learning Centers for 25 years, helping individuals learn to read and comprehend online at lindemoodbell.com. And Lumber Liquidators, offering a variety of sustainable harvested flooring, including pre-finished and stained in 1-800-HARDWOOD. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with the Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord, Sexy Rican. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager, Jessica McLeod. Our intern is Kate Casey. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Largic and Mohammed Mao. Thanks to John Zajac here at Chase Bank. BJ Litterman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Our senior producer is Mr. Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what industry will see bounties next? Amy Dickinson.
Dancing with the Stars will admit that Betty White secretly paid Melissa Gilbert to kneecap her nemesis, Urkel.
Terrible. Brian Babylon.
The Girl Scouts will give $1,000 to anybody who can sell a box of Thin Mints to somebody on a diet.
And Tom Baudet.
PRI puts a bounty on NPR hosts, which backfires when Ira Glass has a heart attack trying to chase down Peter Sagal.
Good luck to him.
Well, if we see any of those bounties panels, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Amy Dickinson, Brian Babylon, Tom Baudet. Thanks to all of you for listening. We're grateful you do. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week in Tucson, Arizona. This is NPR.